This is Patty Daniels. I'm the executive producer of Vermont Edition. We edit our podcast to be shorter and sweeter than what you might have heard on air. Enjoy.
Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinsel. In many ways, the work of the 2017 legislative session has been framed by Governor Phil Scott's strong opposition to increasing any taxes this year. Here's the governor setting the tone in January as he addressed the administration's plan to deal with a projected $70 million budget gap.
We will uphold our obligations, but we will not fill this gap by raising taxes and fees. Vermonters do not have the capacity to pay more. Instead, my administration will establish more sustainable budgeting policies which address fundamental cost drivers across state government.
How did the governor's position affect the consideration of a number of top priorities of progressive lawmakers at the State House? Issues like income tax reform, property tax reform, primary care coverage for all Vermonters, and paid family leave. With us today to discuss these questions are two progressive members of the Vermont Senate, Washington Senator Anthony Polina and Chittenden Senator Chris Pearson. Thanks very much for being here. We really appreciate you coming by.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate
Great
it.
Great to see you, Bob.
I know it's a very busy time over in the Senate at this time of year. So, Anthony, let's start off with the governor's pronouncement. He's saying no new taxes. How much did that influence the consideration of some of the issues that you were most interested in during this session?
Well, first of all, it's influenced the conversation a lot. His message has really been the dominant message in the State House today, and I think that's pretty clear that he's been able to, in a sense, control the message. Having said that, I think we have to look carefully at what he says. He says, in part, that Vermonters don't have the capacity to pay more taxes, or something to that effect. I forget the exact words. And I have a different approach to that. I think that there are Vermonters who have the capacity to pay more taxes. It's those wealthier Vermonters who've seen their incomes go up dramatically over the last 10 or 15 years and yet are paying a smaller percentage of their income in taxes than moderate and low-income people are. So let's be clear. I don't want to raise taxes on moderate families, moderate income families, working families, middle-class families, however you want to characterize them. Those families are paying a higher percentage of their income in taxes than wealthier Vermonters are. If you look at school funding, that's the case. And we can talk about that more in detail. If you look at state and local taxes, that is the case. So it's true that middle-income families and lower-income families are taxed out, essentially. But there's a lot of capacity amongst the wealthier Vermonters who are actually paying less of their income in taxes than moderate-income people are. So we should talk about tax fairness. We should talk about tax reform. And that would allow us to have a conversation about what we would do with that money. If we just created fairness in our tax system, we would generate significant new revenues, which could then be used to meet the needs of more Vermonters. So while he says we're taxed out, I say there's a lot of Vermonters who are going hungry, cold, homeless. People can't afford to send their kids to college. We have to consider that as well.
And Chris, what are your thoughts on that? Did the governor's pronouncement make it very difficult to pass some big initiatives?
Well, the problem with such a blanket statement, as Senator Polina just says, is that the governor says Vermonters do not have capacity. And the truth is most Vermonters do not have the capacity. But that it shouldn't take all tax reform off the table. I mean, you know, Senator Polina and I have sponsored for a couple years now proposals that would shift the way we pay for schools and stretch income sensitivity to all Vermonters. And most Vermonters, two-thirds of us, pay for schools based on our income. And that's a benefit for us. But if you stretched income sensitivity to the top of the economic spectrum, it would be a penalty because the fact is wealthy families are paying far less than the nearly 3% of our income that most of us pay towards the schools. So actually, our proposal would give a tax break to 90% of Vermonters. They would see up to 9% break on their property taxes. So Governor Scott has just sort of taken that off the table, you know, as though all tax proposals and tax debates were the same. For years, I've supported different tax proposals that would basically take the burden off of middle-class families, off of working-class families, and ask our wealthy families to pay more. These folks have been booming for decades now. The wealth inequality is a very serious problem in our country, and Vermont is not immune to that. You see the growth of income overwhelmingly benefiting the top 5%, the top 1%, over and over and over. I think of it this way, Bob. If you walk down the street, and let's say the Trump tax cuts for the wealthy became law, and you walk down the street, would Vermonters tell you that absolutely we should not look at tax policy, or would they agree that actually the wealthy have the capacity to pay more? So it's a very different conversation, and the governor has sort of lumped them all together and wiped them off the table, and that's a shame. We are pushing back at that, of course, and you know, it's a little slower than some of us would like, but there is increasingly a conversation about tax fairness in the State House, and I think that's a good thing.
So, Chris, as you look at this tension between what the governor has said and some of the tax fairness issues that you're talking about, are there one or two issues where you feel particularly frustrated that you haven't been able to make progress on?
Well, you know, as you know, Bob, it's my first time in the Senate and this year, having been in the House for many years. And so what I find frustrating in an incredibly challenging year as a country, and maybe even beyond that, as we look at the politics of worldwide being pretty frustrating, I've kind of a new person. I gotta lay down some roots and just understand the dynamics. It's been very hard for me to be patient in this time of great political upheaval. I think, you know, we're not addressing climate change in any real way, and I think that's a real shame. We're not looking at income inequality and some of these root problems that challenge our economy and challenge the community fabric of our state. And you know, frankly, the administration, for the Scott administration, has not been very present in the committee rooms where we do the work of state government. They have preferred to be more or less absent from that piece of the process and occasionally holding a press conference here or there or kind of sending out an edict, but not sitting down with us and rolling up their sleeves. So that has made progress difficult.
What's been the difference for you moving from the House over to the Senate? Has it been a different experience?
Yeah, it's quite different. You know, you have more work to do in the Senate. It's, I would say, a harder job as a senator, which is partly because now I represent the bulk of Chittenden County as opposed to a small slice of Burlington. So you have much more constituent services, but really the day-to-day is just a lot harder. You're on a small committee, 5 people instead of 11 people. You got to take up more of the space and do more of the work.
Anthony, what's been the most frustrating issue for you this session?
I think this is going to sound redundant a little bit, but it's important to keep saying it. The most frustrating thing has been the inability to get the Senate to seriously look at income inequality and the way in which we tax people. Now, we had a proposal, Chris and I have had a proposal that when it comes to education funding, recognizes the fact that low and moderate income people are paying a higher percentage of their income than wealthier people are. If you ask those wealthier people to pay the same percentage as lower and moderate income people are, you would raise an additional $80 million, which could go into the education fund and would likely be used to lower property taxes for the majority of Vermonters. To me, that's a proposal worth looking at. I mean, how could you not want to look at the possibility of cutting property taxes for the majority of Vermonters by asking wealthier folks to pay their fair share? I'm not saying the proposal is, you know, done in every detail the way it should be, but that's what the legislature should be debating, and we cannot get those issues to rise to the top. So that, I find that very, very frustrating. And I've tried also to get the Senate to consider resolutions saying that we are concerned about income inequality. Even everybody is. Everybody knows they are. Everybody talks about it all the time. But it's really difficult to get the Senate to go on record as being concerned about income inequality. When you have income inequality, that's what undermines your economy. When people don't have money in their pockets, they can't go downtown and buy a pizza or take their kids to a movie or pay their taxes or pay their bills. We need to put money in the pockets of regular folks again. And that's where inequality is a serious problem that's dragging down our economy. If all the only people at the top are the only ones with the money, they're not going to spend their money. You only buy so many pizzas, you know. You got to be able to spread the wealth out.
Well, we've been talking about how Governor Scott has opposed any tax increase for any reason this year. But here you are in the Senate with a strong majority of Democrats there. Are you equally frustrated with them?
I'm equally frustrated with everybody in the Senate who is unwilling to have these kinds of conversations. Yes, I think that, you know, with all due respect to the leadership of the Senate, they have not provided a strong counter voice, strong enough counter voice to the Scott administration. And I think that's unfortunate. And I think partly that's because the new leadership, I think, has to get their feet on the ground and has to get, you know, grow into their jobs in a sense. But I hope that we get to the point where we start having serious conversations about inequality and the need to have tax fairness, because that's what Vermonters really want and really need.
Yeah. Bob, let me just say that I share some of that frustration, but I also think there's a couple of factors we have to look at. It is a whole new cast of leadership across the board from the governor pro tem and the Speaker of the House. So everybody's sorting themselves out and figuring out how to go. I do think that the proper measure of success is looking at a biennium, right? So the two-year process between elections. And I think, for instance, the minimum wage, that's a big priority for Senator Polina and I and progressives and others across the state. We have been laying the groundwork to increase the minimum wage when we come back in January. We know right now that January 2018, the minimum wage climbs from $10 to $10.50, and we are doing the work now to get ready to push that further when we come back next winter. So I think that's good. I think you also have to realize that a lot of the inaction in Montpelier, I've been frustrated with this, but I can't really disagree with the strategy. The frustration, the lack of action in some ways in Montpelier is because of the looming federal budget. And we don't know what Trump and his friends are going to do to the country's budget, the federal budget. And Vermont, about a third of our budget is hinged to what the feds do. So I am somewhat sympathetic with people who say, yeah, that's a good idea, but we really do need to see if we're going to have a third of our budget just yanked out from under us. And particularly this shows up in Medicaid, where we're a small state with a fairly generous Medicaid program, and we're going to want to make sure that as many Vermonters as possible maintain their health coverage. And so, you know, if there's an air of caution, I think there's a shred of that makes sense. But my goodness, the moment we understand exactly what the feds are going to do, and that's likely to be this fall, we will be concocting ideas to, you know, try to mitigate some of the challenges there and really have a better sense of the lay of the land. I'm hopeful for when we come back in January.
Let's go to our callers and talk to James in Middlebury. Hey, James, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I want to address this question to Senator Polina, who has familiarity with agriculture. The governor doesn't want to raise any new taxes, and he says words to this effect that he wants existing programs to become more efficient across state government, I think is what he said. So one of the least efficient programs that we've had and had for many, many years is support for agriculture. We have this looming problem with the lake, and you hear these humongous estimates of what it's going to cost to clean up the lake, except we don't hear it much in the closing weeks of the session. In fact, we don't hear it at all. So Vermont spends $70 million a year to support agriculture, has been doing that for 40 years or so. That's $2 billion. And on top of that, we're supposed to be spending another $70 million a year to support the industry that is the primary cause of the pollution in the lake. Why can't that money be shifted someplace else, Mr. Polina?
I'm not sure if I get the end of your question exactly right. I think the money, we should be investing more in helping farmers transition to a more sustainable and more organic type of agriculture. We've talked about providing money to allow for the removal of phosphorus from dairy farms and actually building a market for phosphorus. It's something we don't want in our lake, of course, and in our waters, and we have too much of it, but there's actually a market for phosphorus in other parts of the country. So part of what I want to say is I think we need to be more creative but make more of an investment in making sure that farms operate in a way that reduce pollution and protect the lake. In general, I think you're right in saying that we haven't heard a lot of conversation in the last couple of weeks about how we're going to tackle the needed cleanup for the lake. Well, not just the lake, but all of our waterways. It is a huge expense that's been brought about because of our unwillingness or inability to attack the problem sooner. And the overall point is that we have failed to make investments in water quality for the last 10 or 20 years, And the problem has gotten worse. When you don't address a problem, it doesn't go away. It gets worse. And that's why we find ourselves now in a position of having to spend, you know, tens and tens of millions of dollars every year for many years. It's going to be billions of dollars before we're done to clean up a lake that we've allowed to become as polluted as it is. So it's partly better funding agriculture and agricultural programs. It's partly understanding that we have to start addressing those problems now because we should have done it before. And I think that it's a good indication, and it relates to other issues as well, where you fail to make the investment when you need to, you find that problems get worse. It's, you can say the same thing about affordable housing and a lot of other issues where we've ignored them over time. And now people say we have a crisis in affordable housing, yet we're not willing to make an investment to try to solve the problem. And we have to start being willing to have these conversations about how to make investments so that we can address the needs of Vermonters.
Let's turn to Charles, who is calling from South Burlington. Hey, Charles, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you. You know, with all due respect to your well-intentioned guest, there is a point I'd like to make, and that is in Vermont concurrently, actually for a while now, we're experiencing not so much of a brain drain, but a wealth drain. And what I'm speaking of is there are people like me, my age group and wealth group, who are leaving the state. I have one close friend, 37 years he owned a business in the state of Vermont, a very successful business. He's down to Florida. He moved. And my wife and I, my wife retired in a year, we're looking to leave the state as well now. So, you know, this concept of just taxing those who worked hard, did make good decisions, and brought money into the state is a double-edged sword, is what I'm saying. And I think that the people in your panel right now are not really addressing that or thinking about that.
Could I just make two quick comments? One is that we're talking about fairness and people paying their fair share, not overtaxing anybody or, you know, doing it in a way that's not fair. But the other thing that I think needs to be said always when we have these conversations is that the idea that wealthy people are leaving Vermont is simply not true. In other words, if you look at the people who study this kind of stuff, they will tell you that, in fact, people who move into Vermont have more money than the people who move out of Vermont. Who is leaving Vermont are working, middle-class, lower-income people who are moving to South Carolina where they can afford to buy a house. And that's my concern, is those are the people that were overtaxing. Those are the people that were overburdening. Those are the people that eventually have to leave. It's a myth to say that wealthy people are leaving the state of Vermont, at least according to the statistics and the researchers that do this work.
Yeah, and I would just say, you know, there certainly are people who leave Vermont, sure. And some of them may well be wealthy. But on balance, more, if you're tracking who leaves and who comes in, the folks coming in tend to have more money than the people leaving. And we are always going to battle with Florida. May have to do with their tax policy. It may well have to do with the sunshine and being able to walk around in your shorts and T-shirt in the middle of winter. You know, what is to me – so I take Charles's point, but I think he's only looking part of the equation. To me, what we need to focus on, and the answers are more elusive than some of the challenges we've been talking about, is young people. You know, we are an aging state, and we need to address policies that attract young people to move here, that bring our young people back. And I do think a lot of Vermonters leave, and I respect their desire to explore. And then the question is, how do we bring them back? You know, a silly thing that maybe doesn't seem obvious to that is marijuana legalization. And I talk to a lot of young people. And they're not asking me to, you know, people who are just graduated from college in their early 20s, early parts of their career, they're not asking me to legalize marijuana because they're having trouble accessing marijuana. There's plenty of marijuana for people that want to get to it. What these people that I talk to would like to have is state government that reflects reality and deals with common sense in a way that their eyes are wide open. And sometimes the feeling is people are just – the elected officials are hiding from reality and not willing to face it front on. And so I think if you look at climate change, you look at drug policy, you look at some of these issues, minimum wage – I think if we were had good wages, had sensible drug policy, and had a robust industry that was looking at ways to mitigate climate change and ways to build sustainable communities, that young people would be very interested in coming here after college and really setting down roots here. And I would add to that, by the way, you know, the work we've been doing on childcare and family leave policy, these all come together to make Vermont an even more attractive place to come and raise families, start families, and grow old.
Let's talk about this bill that would provide primary care for all Vermonters. Got some attention this year, Chris, but it didn't seem to really make it through the Health and Welfare Committee in the Senate. Your thoughts about that? Disappointments about that?
Well, I think, you know, we need to keep pushing on health care. It's climbing up to be about 20% of our economy. And it's just bankrupting us at property tax level when we're paying for health providers for public employees, and then family budgets, on and on and on and on. So we have to keep pushing. The question is, how do we do that, and what can a state do in particular? The challenge with primary care for all, which is a great goal that I think that a lot of us share, is not too different from trying to push down an entire single-payer system onto a very cumbersome state system that is not entirely controlled by the state. So it is logistically very challenging. That's kind of a drag for an answer. But I think that that is just reflected in the reality of the many years we've been trying to poke around these challenges. And it's made increasingly difficult from the fact that you don't have an administration from the Governor Scott administration actively engaged on healthcare reform. So, you know, I think we're going to continue to have the discussions around how to get better access for people, whether it's primary care for all or other ideas. We are also, you're seeing movements on trying to squash down the enormous increase in healthcare costs generally. So you've seen the UVM Medical Center came in with, I think it was a $25 million over budget. They raised more money than they were supposed to. You know, that's been pretty consistent. So a lot of us are looking at ways to have the Green Mountain Care Board really clamp down on them. We can't just have runaway spending. I mean, my goodness, if your school budget goes up 2 or 3% in a single year, people are up in arms just about taking to the streets. Healthcare costs have been climbing 3, 4, 5, 7% year after year after year, and people don't seem to recognize the connection that, that state policies have to really driving those costs down. I think that's where we have to focus right now.
We got this email from Mary who wanted to know, what are you talking about when you talk about rich people? What income levels are you making with this statement? Anthony, where is the tax capacity?
Sure. Well, it depends a little bit on sort of the issue you're talking about. But let's look at the education funding, for example. People who are making $90,000 to $100,000 a year, it gets a little complicated, but they qualify for income sensitivity. They're paying 3% or so of their income to fund schools. And that's a decision that we made as a policy that it should be about 3% of their income to fund schools. If you look at people who are making $300,000 or more, they're paying 1.5%, and then it goes down to 1%. People making $500,000 are paying 0.5% or so of their income. So what we're usually talking about when we talk about these kinds of proposals or these kinds of numbers are people who are making somewhere around the $300,000 or more range as people who can afford to pay more. And the thing is, they're paying less. It's not just that you say, well, I think you should pay more. It's like you look at the facts and you say, you folks are paying less of your income than your neighbors are. Maybe we should ask you to pay a bit more. So we understand that, you know, a couple of people with decent salaries can be making over $100,000 a year easily. We're not talking about what should be middle-class people. We're talking about people who are on the higher end of the wealth scale. If you look at where incomes have gone up in over the last 10 or 15 years, it's the top 5% in Vermont who are making – seeing their incomes go up significantly. So we're asking those – we're saying that perhaps those people should be able to pay a bit more in order to make sure that we can have the needs of Vermonters taken care of.
I think both of you support additional funding for areas like higher education, child care, early education. We talked about more money for mental health workers. In the budget that just passed the Senate, there is some additional money for those areas, but probably not as much as both of you would have liked. And yet you both voted for the budget.
Well, I think, you know, you never get everything you want. And compared to the House budget and compared to where I thought we would be at the beginning of the year, this budget patched a lot of my top concerns. You know, the House passed budget would have had homeless people on very cold nights not have anywhere to go. You know, there's folks who struggle with homelessness in Burlington, where I live, and across the state. And I just don't think we're a community that lets people freeze on the street in the middle of February. So I was glad we patched that as an example. The mental health system in Vermont is in crisis. Talk to people that work in an ER and hospitals. They're putting people, mental health patients, in ER beds for days on days and days on end. And really, when you bore down into the challenge there, you see that with the way we pay mental health workers at our designated agencies, which are basically doing state functions, is not at all fair and nowhere near a livable wage. And so the Senate took some very positive steps, I think, basically over 2 years to make sure all of these people's incomes rise to $15 an hour. That should stabilize our mental health workforce to some degree, because you have a very high rate of turnover. What we do is we end up having social workers that take jobs at our designated agencies. They get some experience. They get certified. They get sort of through their first couple of years of employment, and then they go take jobs where they can earn $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 more a year. And it's creating a lot of pressure on our system, not the least of which is showing up in ER beds. So, you know, so those are a couple examples. Higher ed, boy, we have a big hole to dig out of there. It's interesting to see the discussion that I think Bernie Sanders, frankly, deserves credit for creating around the country, is the idea of tuition-free higher ed. And then New York State, as you know, Bob, has passed probably the first bill in the country recently to grant tuition-free higher ed to a great majority of their residents. So there's some models out there. As with all of this stuff, is how do you fund the money, especially with a governor who's sort of grumpy about looking at any new priorities.
And Anthony, if I remember correctly, there have been times in the last few years where you voted against the budget. Is that right?
Yes, I voted against the budget a number of times, sometimes because we continue to fund higher education at a lower rate than we fund our correctional facilities. So I've really tried to make the point that if I'm going to support a budget, it has to be a budget that is at least trying to meet the needs of people in the state of Vermont. And I was particularly frustrated with our underfunding of our state colleges, which goes back to a whole conversation about the economy and young people and whatnot. I would just want to say briefly that I think the Senate Appropriations Committee and the chair, and I think the leadership of the Senate, did a great job in fashioning a budget this year that tries its best to meet the needs of as many Vermonters as possible. We still have a way to go, but I think that budget was well worth supporting because it showed a sincere effort to try to do the right thing for a lot of folks.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Robert in Bethel. Hey, Robert, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Bob. Welcome, or thank you, panel. Bob, I just wanted to talk about the legislative food chain, and I call the scene at the State House the Montpelier Musical Chairs. You know, back a fundamental thing that I think the Speaker of the House should reflect on is her fast appointment. No new leadership has been appointed to any of these committees. She, you know, got in within hours. She appointed the same old musty, moldy bureaucrats, you know, that have been in there forever. And that was hours after she swore, you know, she was sworn into office. And I just think the food chain of the legislative process in Montpelier is a game of musical chairs, whether it's the House or the Senate. It just needs new, fresh looks at things. I mean, I could name some chairs of committees that I, you know, our state rep here, I think she forgot about the duties of her district here and just runs to Montpelier and crafts these, gets on these committees and crafts these supposed laws or whatever that end up in the Senate, and they don't really go anywhere. So there's a lot of mustiness that I think needs to be, it's springtime. I think we should open the windows at the State House and get some new, fresh leadership, whether they're new progressives, new Republicans, new Democrats, new whatevers. But I think the food, as I call it, the legislative food chain, I think it's very dysfunctional. And I'm meaning to insult anybody, but I just think we need to kind of clean it up there.
All right, Robert, we appreciate your phone call. Let me ask you both this. We see that Senator Sanders is out on the national level trying to encourage people, grassroots support around the country as a way to build sort of a new political system. Are you doing the same thing in Vermont? Is that something that the progressives hope to do, Anthony?
I think yes, the progressives hope to do that and are doing that. I think we have to all realize that that's a long process. It's not easy to get Americans or Vermonters involved in politics. In part, it goes to what the caller was just saying, which is a reflection of the fact that people are frustrated. When they're frustrated, they either can take action or they can go home and watch TV and drink a beer and be quiet. So it's hard to motivate people to get involved in politics. You have to give them something to believe in, and you have to give them something that they're able and willing to do. So the Progressive Party is committed to doing that. I think that for myself, as an example, I spent many years as an organizer and an advocate before I got elected to the Senate. And I think the most important thing I can do is make sure that other people's voices are heard as much as possible. So I think the work that Bernie Sanders is doing to mobilize people on the national level is important, and I think it's something that we're trying to do here on the state level as well. But again, I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying we've achieved it, but we've done a much better job than the other parties have.
Chris, let me ask you about another issue that we get lots of emails and comments about, and that's paid family leave. And folks supporting that concept thinks it's a great way to attract more young families to the state of Vermont. You were talking about it earlier. There's a scaled-back version of it that is going to be on the House floor early next week. It scales it back to 6 weeks of leave time, and it also puts the entire burden for paying for it on employees and not employers. What are your thoughts about that approach?
Well, I'm not super knowledgeable about all of the details, but we've been having this discussion in different ways for many, many years. I've been the lead sponsor during my time in the House for something along these lines. The bottom line is right now, as a Vermonter, I think you have the right to 6 unpaid weeks if you have a baby. So no money, but you can not lose your job, basically, is what that means. And that is not adequate. You talk to a mother who is dropping off a 6-week-old baby and going to work. And you know, you don't have to be schooled in the ways of animals to understand that's wrong, right? A little baby stays with its mother or father for as long as possible. And they talk about, I have little kids. They talk about the fourth trimester. So those first 3 months that a baby is out is really important. It's sort of thought of as the fourth trimester. So we shouldn't be splitting families up at that point. And we are way behind the rest of the advanced world on this issue. And Vermont has a chance to take a leadership role. And so I hope the House is going to advance something. Frankly, they deserve credit for just advancing anything. I would like to see the cost of this shared by employers and employees. But I'm looking forward to having this discussion one way or another. But I will say that part of the problem will be timing. And we're going to likely face a challenge of minimum wage or paid leave. You know, we can't do both. And that's, I would boost the minimum wage, put money directly in people's pockets. But a paid family leave is something we've got to do. And, it should be as strong as possible. And to the extent that this supports working families, I mean, this is just a really, really basic, some would call it a human right, that and when you're sick or you have a baby or your mother is dying, you know, you have the capacity to care for them without losing your job.
Senator Plina, we've got about a minute left in the program, but we did get an email from Andy in Burlington about a subject that you feel very strongly about, and that's a state bank, and Andy wanting to know if a state bank would help strengthen the Vermont economy. And again, we've got about 60
seconds.
A state
bank would help strengthen the state's economy because it would allow us to make the investments that we need to make in infrastructure, school renovations, affordable housing, because it would allow the state through a state bank to access money at a very low interest rate and be able to lend that out for needs around the state of Vermont. So a state bank could be very, very useful for our economy. And when you talk about what's frustrating is we cannot get the legislature to really even have a discussion about a state bank. And yet it's one of the more important things we should consider doing. It would allow us to meet the needs of Vermonters at a lower cost than we're currently doing. It would save us money and it would generate money for the state of Vermont.
Washington Senator Anthony Polina, Chittenden Senator Chris Pearson are two progressive members of the Vermont Senate. Many thanks for taking the time to be on the program today.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate it.